Hello, this is Aaron. Thanks for joining me for my second podcast. I had a report that someone wasn't able to listen to the first one, so hopefully I can figure out why that is and make this one work a little better. It sounded like some people were able to get it, but I'm going to look into distributing with some other methods, maybe through iTunes or something like that. I think I'll need to do that just to make it a little more convenient for people. If my voice sounds funny, it might be because I've got a loose tooth, keeps clacking against the ones next to it, and other than the pain every once in a while when it does that, it kind of keeps me from talking quite right, or at least it sounds like that to me. I'm trying this outside again tonight. It's a nice still evening, and buffalo gnats are a little bit annoying, but I think it's going to be okay. Had some more rain. It's pretty soaked around here, so I'm hoping it holds off and can get some things done in the garden. I took a garden video Sunday, but I had trouble uploading it, so I haven't been able to get that uploaded where people can see it yet, but I'll give that another try tonight, maybe. A lot of small animal stuff going on around here lately. My neighbors brought me over three little chicks the other day. Apparently, their grandkids had brought them home from school. School got chicks as a, I don't know, an experiment or for some kind of a project for little small kids. And then the chicks ended up going home with the kids. And then, of course, people were like, okay, now what do we do with these chicks? So they knew I had chickens. They brought them over to me. As most people don't realize, you can't just take two-week-old chicks and throw them in with, you know, especially 3 2-week-old chicks and throw them in with 40-some grown chicks. They would just kill them, and they wouldn't have a chance to, they certainly wouldn't be able to get to the feed, but there's a chance they would just pick on them and kill them. So, you know, they thought we were just going to throw them in there, but I said, no, I'll keep them in a, keep them in a tub in the house for a while until they get a little more size on them, and so that's what I've been doing. So I thought I was done with the chick raising part of the year, but it turns out I'm not. I don't know what they are yet, what breed they are, roosters or hens or anything. Kind of look like a rooster and two hens at this point, but I still don't know the breed. But hoping I can get them moved out with the others before too long, but I want to try to let them get big enough that they'll be able to hold their own. And there's also, all of a sudden, like 15 or 16 kittens around here now. So I'll be looking to give kittens away one of these days when they get old enough to be weaned. Because I certainly don't need that many. I'm glad to have some cats around because they're keeping the mouse population down. They're doing a real good job of that. But I don't need 15 or 16. I thought I might talk about computers a little bit, as far as my topic goes. Or maybe I'll let Guy bark at something behind me. I built a new computer for myself, just a new workstation for my desk, about Christmas time. And it had been about 7 years or so since my last one. And the last one was still working okay, it was still holding up, but it was getting some flakiness in the hard drives, it seemed like, maybe in the memory. And it would also had some capacitors on the motherboard that I could just see from looking at them were kind of bulging. So odds are it was going to quit on me at some point. And so I said, well, it's time to go ahead and get a new one. And there were some pretty good deals on Newegg. I've been buying all my stuff through Newegg for probably 15 years. I'm always real happy with them. But there were some good deals on Newegg about Christmas time, so I put together a new system. And always just get the parts and build it myself. And that's gotten a lot easier than it used to be. It used to be a lot harder to match up and make sure you had the right this for the right that, and everything would fit together and stuff. It's gotten quite a bit easier, so since I don't do it, but every 5 to 7 years, there's always new stuff that I don't know about. So I'm glad it's gotten easier. So I built this new system and turned the old one into a backup system, and it's still sitting there running, but at least I don't have to worry that it's gonna flake out on me one of these days. But it got me thinking about my first computer, which I bought in, I guess, 88 or 89. I don't know exactly when. I know it was after I dropped out of college, but probably not too long after that. And it was a Commodore 128, which I bought from Sears. That was back when Sears sold computers through the catalog, and I went to the store and got mine. But I think it was about $700, somewhere in that range, for the computer and monitor. It came with a floppy drive in it. Didn't have hard drives yet back then. And I was probably kind of towards the tail end of that period. I was probably one of the later people to get one of those in 89, or even if it was in 88. It was kind of towards the end of that, machine's run. And I just lucked into it. I didn't know anything about computers. I just knew I wanted one because they were cool. And I had done just a little bit. I'd like seen one at college for kids. It wasn't a Commodore. That was probably an Apple. But I'd seen a couple things you could do at college for kids. And then we had some computers my last year of high school, which were like a business system. They ran CPM on a Z80 processor. And so I started tinkering around with those and learning some assembly language stuff while everybody else was doing the word processing and stuff. The teacher didn't know how to use them either, so he was kind of like, here's a manual, do what you want to do. But I still didn't get to spend that much time on it because it was just class time. So I knew I wanted a computer, but I didn't know anything about them. I didn't know what I was getting. I just was like, okay, Sears has this, I can afford it, I'll get it. And it turned out it was really, for its time, it was one of the best computers really there's ever been, like I say, for its time. It sold 3 to 4 million units, which I think puts it in the top 10. And it would have sold a lot more, but they made it almost entirely backward compatible with the Commodore 64, which had sold about 20 million copies, 20 million units. And so most people, and so the software companies just kept making 64 software that would run on both. And so most people didn't see any reason to upgrade. There were only a few things you would need to upgrade to the 128 for. This was before companies figured out, hey, we've got to make things, we got to force people to upgrade every year or two. We've got to make it so the old one stops being good enough and people have to upgrade. Back then, they tried to make it so your machine would work for you as long as possible. A totally different mindset. But I used that thing for a long time, and I ended up getting a couple other 128s and adding things. I added a hard drive when it got to where you could get hard drives for them. Added a mouse. There weren't mice early on. Everything was joysticks. And added a printer. Eventually, once I got in the internet business, got on the internet with it, mostly through the Unix systems at work. But even before the internet, you could use it on a system called Q-Link, which was a Commodore-only dial-up system. Where I lived, you couldn't dial local numbers, so I didn't use it much, but just a little bit. So, like I said, I used the heck out of it. And I compare that to the system I have now, and that system had a 1 megahertz or 2 megahertz processor in it, depending on what you were doing. And the one I have now has 8 4 gigahertz cores, kind of individual processors that share some stuff. It's kind of complicated, but so basically, the system I have now is about 32,000 times faster than the one I had then. And that's kind of a conservative estimate because it's faster in other ways too. But so it's about 32,000 times faster. It has, memory-wise, that one had 128K. The system I have now is 16 gig. So you know, something like 16,000 times more memory also. It can just, you know, it's just a totally different thing. One thing that always strikes me is that first machine that I had, I really understood everything that was going on in it. I had a hardware manual that gave you a complete layout of everything in memory. Out of the 128K of memory, which some of that was empty space for programs to run in, but you had like 8K of ROM, or what was called kernel ROM, which was routines that did things. Like if you wanted to put a character on the screen or something, you put the character in this particular register and you called this routine in ROM. So you had all these routines in ROM, you had all these special locations in memory where you'd put things to do certain things. You also had like 8K of BASIC, which was a programming language that was simpler, that you could use to do things. It was quite a bit simpler than talking to the hardware directly, but it was a lot slower too. So I had a complete layout of all this stuff, and I knew it. I mean, I don't know if I could say I had it memorized, but I knew everything that was going on. So when I used it, I knew what was happening. You could even do things like you could hear when the drive was running, you could hear it go from track to track to track, and you could tell whether it was in the inner tracks or the outer tracks and stuff like that. It was just so much more of a feel for the thing and a knowledge of what was going on inside it. And now, the system I have now, even though I'm certainly more knowledgeable and I know a lot more about what's going on, there's so much more going on that I don't know, that I don't have a clue about. You've got something like the graphics card. I just have the vaguest idea what's going on inside that thing. You know, programs just say, here, put this shape here, and the graphics card takes care of it. And I don't have a clue. So, you know, I'm programming on a surface level, but there's so much going on underneath. Just megabytes and megabytes of stuff that's running that I don't have a clue about. So you don't get that same sense of, I guess you'd say, kind of a hobbyist feel for it, that here I have this machine that I really know, that I really have a grasp on and am really controlling here. It's more of a tool, I guess. I mean, I'd compare it to a car, except it's not that hard to understand everything. If you're kind of a shade tree mechanic, it's not that hard to understand everything that's going on in your car. But with a modern computer, really nobody knows what's going on. Nobody knows everything that's going on in there. Different people know different parts of it. But nobody really knows everything that's going on at every level, because there's just so many levels. So I was thinking about that, you know, with my old system and with my new system, I don't really do that much now that I didn't do then. As far as, you know, back then I used to play games, I wrote programs, you know, that was kind of it. And did a little bit of, you know, productivity type stuff, typing something up or whatever, although before I had a printer I wouldn't have done too much of that. But nowadays I still do that kind of stuff, plus, you know, doing stuff on the internet, email and web browsing and stuff like that. So sometimes I think we really haven't come that far, even though we have so much more power and we're able to put things on the screen in such a more of a pretty way and faster. And we, you know, playing games, you know, the sound is so much better and the graphics so much better and everything, but the experience isn't necessarily that much better. I still have just as much fun firing up some of those old games. Even though I don't have the computer anymore, my new system can run the old system in an emulator, and I can still fire up an old game, and some of those are still just as fun. Sometimes the interface isn't as good, because back then you didn't, like I said, we didn't have mice, and so you couldn't just point and click on things. But the gameplay, the experience of it, is still just as fun. And so sometimes I think, you know, we've come so far with all this power, and it seems like we should be doing more with it. But, and another thing too is, I don't just have that computer now. I have a few computers, and my computers have computers because you can run emulators inside one computer that run then another computer inside a virtual system inside that. So a lot of times I've got my system, I've got my computer sitting there. I run FreeBSD, which is a free operating system based on Unix, kind of like Linux, which you might have heard of. Some people have heard of Linux that wouldn't necessarily have heard of FreeBSD. So the main system is running FreeBSD, but then I'll have a virtual system running Windows because I need to run a game in that. Or I'll have a virtual system running my Commodore emulator so there's a game in that. Or I'll have a virtual system running Linux because I need to do something in Linux. I need to test something in a particular Linux program. Even though programs are generally similar from Linux to FreeBSD, sometimes something's a little bit different. And so you've got virtual systems within systems. So it's like my computers have computers of their own. And I also have computers in other places, virtual computers, because nowadays you can, for a couple bucks a month, you can rent a virtual computer somewhere else. And so I've got computers in other countries and other continents. And they're all doing stuff, but it just seems like they should be doing more. So I've been thinking lately, like, how can I do something more with this? You know, you can run websites, you can make stuff available. There for a while there were projects like the SETI project where SETI, the SETI project, what they do is they collect I guess you'd say radiation coming from space. They just collect whatever signals are coming from space. And it's all just, you know, random electromagnetic signals of all sorts. They collect all that. And then they analyze it to look for patterns, basically looking for signs of life beyond Earth, looking for patterns in that. So at one point, I don't know if they do it anymore, but you could sign up for this program to where your computer, when you weren't using it, would go out and it would get a block of that data, and it would analyze it, and then it would send the results back to them. So if you wanted your computer to have something to do while you weren't using it, you could sign up for something like that. And I know people do. If you've heard of Bitcoin, I don't completely understand how Bitcoin works, but it's somehow an electronic form of money, currency, where it's somehow based on encryption keys, and you have to find keys. They call it mining, like mining for gold, except you're mining for these keys, and you can set a computer looking for these keys, basically trying keys until it finds one that works. The only thing is, as I understand it, the amount of electricity you would burn up doing that is actually more than it would pay you back in found keys, and so that's not really a wise way to use your extra computer time either. But I've just been thinking, you know, it'd be nice to do something more, something different with these computers. We've kind of moved to a model in recent years of leveraging free services like YouTube and things like that, YouTube, Google, Gmail, to where you don't do anything on your own computer anymore. You do less on your own computer. You do everything somewhere else. And so instead of putting, like, you know, these podcasts, instead of putting them on my own site, you know, I could put them on YouTube, or I could put them on Shoutcast or something like that. Let them deal with the downloading and the bandwidth and all that stuff. But, of course, when you do that, you lose a certain amount of control. You know, you don't have the control over your own stuff anymore. They do. But that's kind of been the model, because that way you don't have to worry about it. You don't have to run your own servers and keep them updated and secure and all that kind of stuff. You don't have to worry about whether you're using too much bandwidth for your downloads. You just let them deal with all that. But And like I say, that's kind of the model everyone has gone to in the last decade or so. But I'm not sure that's really the way of the future. One thing we're running into is a lot of these sites now are starting to censor things quite a bit, are starting to shut down particular points of view. And so you can, you know, you can build up your reputation as a YouTube guy, and then all of a sudden one day your YouTube account is gone or banned or locked or something because you said something that offended somebody. So, you know, if you run your own stuff, you don't have to deal with, you don't have to worry about that. You don't have to deal with it. And so I think there's going to be an opportunity to go back in that direction. And we're already seeing that in some cases, like with Gab. Gab is starting to replace Twitter because Twitter is starting to shut down dissenting viewpoints from the mainstream leftist viewpoint. And so Gab is going to replace Twitter. And there's going to be other, InfoGalactic is going to replace Wikipedia because Wikipedia is doing the same thing. It's kind of been taken over by a particular group of people that have a particular point of view, and they don't allow anything else to sneak in there, as if they can help it. And so I think there's going to be an opening, I know there's an opening for alternatives to sites like YouTube. The problem with them is it takes a massive amount of resources. It's not something that anybody who doesn't have Google's kind of money could pull off. So rather than trying to duplicate that model, I think an opportunity for the future is going to be going back to more of a distributed host your own stuff model. But instead of having to run your own server, understand everything that's going on, do your own security and all that kind of stuff, I think the opportunity, which I'm going to be looking at, is how can I help people run their own servers and make it easy for them to where they still own it, they still control it, they still, you know, have complete control over what goes out and how and so on, but it's as easy for them as just dumping it up to YouTube or throwing it on Google Docs or whatever. So that's something I'm looking into, trying to come up with a sort of a turnkey, kind of run your own server solution that I can offer to people who maybe they don't need massive amounts of bandwidth, so they don't really need to go to like a YouTube for that. They just need the convenience, and they need to get something, you know, some podcasts or videos or whatever out to a smallish clientele, maybe hundreds or thousands of people, and they don't want to get tied into some big operation that might shut them down one day and just leave them, you know, struggling. So that's something I'm looking into, something I'm kind of working on the side. I've got other things going on. So I think at some point I'll talk some more about the old computers. That's always something I enjoy reading or hearing about, but it's something I haven't done too much writing about other than stuff I wrote way back when in the early 90s, kind of when I was very first on the internet, and we were still discussing those computers online because so many people were still running them, but maybe I'll come back to that topic another time. So I think I probably rambled on about that long enough. And I'll be back in a day or two, because I want to do 3 of these a week, and it's already Wednesday. So I guess I'll be back tomorrow to try to get 3 in this week. So thanks for being with me, and have a good night.